Coming up on this episode, Stephen Salvatore is here to tell us all about the boyfriend subscription.
Welcome to episode 450 of the Big Gay Fiction Podcast, the show for avid readers and passionate fans of queer romance fiction. I'm Will, and with me, as always, is my co-host and husband, Jeff.
Hello, Rainbow Romance Reader. Welcome to another episode of the show. I can't believe you just said 450. That's pretty amazing. We've been doing this for a while. As always, the podcast is brought to you in part by our remarkable community on Patreon. If you'd like more information about what we offer to patrons, including the opportunity to ask questions to our guests, go to patreon.com/biggayfictionpodcast.
Before we get to our conversation with Stephen, I think you should tell us what you thought about the boyfriend subscription.
Yes. As you might imagine, having loved Stephen's YA books, I was head over heels for his first adult romance. The boyfriend subscription is a wonderful fake dating, opposites attract romance that, as you'll hear Stephen talk about in a few minutes, is a retelling of a sorts of Pretty Woman. Cole is a successful entrepreneur behind the Verstal app, which allows sex workers and consumers to form connections. He's working to take the app mainstream, and he's wooing investors. Teddy, on the other hand, is reeling from a divorce and losing his business. He's on the verge of packing up and leaving New York for good. But in a chance meeting at Teddy's favorite dive bar, Cole and Teddy meet, and before the night's over, Teddy's agreed to spend a week as Cole's fake date. Teddy can help Cole project a more traditional image as he entertains some investors. Plus, if Cole brings a date to his sister's wedding, his parents will not pester him about not having someone in his life. Of course, fake dating never works out like it's supposed to. Cole has rules: no kissing and no falling in love. And those go out the window faster than Cole would have liked. Teddy, too, was just in this to make enough money to recover from bankruptcy and maybe not have to move after all. With the feels come all sorts of extra scrutiny, as people in Cole's organization try to figure out exactly who Teddy is and what's in his background, including how bad his ex screwed him over, because they're convinced that Teddy is just in this to take Cole for even more money. Teddy's best friend, on the other hand, is also wondering what Cole's real motives are. It gets deliciously messy at the sister's wedding, as so many of these things kind of come to bear all of a sudden on the couple. This is a super fun, super sexy book that is full of tropey goodness with a great dose of Pretty Woman fun. I read an advanced copy of this not too long after I happened to revisit Pretty Woman by seeing the Broadway musical on its recent tour, and so it was so fun seeing how Stephen made so many elements of the film work in this story. Stephen also gives us some great supporting characters, with Cole's sister Mallory, who is very happy to tell her brother that he needs to focus a little less on work and finding himself a partner in life. Teddy's friend Kit is also no nonsense about protecting her bestie, but she's also always down for a good time. I hope you'll add this wonderful book to your spring reading list. The boyfriend subscription from Stephen Salvatore is not to be missed. Now, let's get to my conversation with Stephen so you'll get all the details about Teddy and Cole and why Pretty Woman is the inspiration for their tale. We also find out why he wanted to start writing adult romance and what his favorite scenes were to write. Stephen also shares details on his next book, which happens to get its inspiration from another Julia Roberts movie. And he's got some great recommendations for you, too. Stephen, welcome back to the show. It's great to have you here. It's been a few years.
Thank you so much for having me, Jeff. I can't believe it's been that long, and I'm so happy to be back.
I'm excited we get to talk about the boyfriend subscription. I love this book so much. Cole and Teddy just really stole my heart, and you also used fake dating, and we'll talk more about that too, because it's one of my favorite things.
Oh, love a fake dating trope.
Tell everybody in your own words what the boyfriend subscription is about.
So the boyfriend subscription is really my gay ass take on Pretty Woman. And Pretty Woman has been one of my favorite movies since I was in high school, and one of my best friends introduced me to it. And I had always wondered, like, oh, what would a gay version of Pretty Woman look like? And the older I got, and now, especially within the last 5 years or so with OnlyFans and Twitter and every gay male posting everything, in every online forum, and then figuring out how to monetize that, I just sort of started to think, like, I think there's an idea here, and I can combine that with Pretty Woman so that I can kind of turn it on its head. And now it's the sex worker who has all of the money and power in the relationship. But because it's a male-male romance, there aren't any archetypes really to play with, like heterosexual archetypes. So what if they're both in some way kind of the sex worker? And so that was kind of fun for me to play around with and build their characters off of that fun little role play I was thinking about in my head.
It is an interesting spin. And as you said it, I kind of thought about that a little bit because I hadn't really focused on the fact that they're both, in a way, sex workers in this story. For one of them, it is their job. It is the company that they built because it's sort of an OnlyFans meets kind of Grindr sort of thing, sort of the way I looked at it.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. It's like a Grindr, OnlyFans, in some ways like Match.com sort of a situation. So yeah, there was a lot of kind of taking what I knew from just like gay culture and playing around with that. And then thinking about Teddy, who is not a sex worker by trade or occupation, but in a way kind of finds himself in that position, just in that whole like fake dating trope.
What was it about Pretty Woman that captured you so much as a teenager and then to bring it forward into your storytelling?
I mean, I have to give all credit to Julia Roberts because I think she is she's magnetic, and the gravitas that she brought to that role. And I think that movie came out in 1990, I want to say. So I was 4 years old in 1990. So I didn't know anything about anything. I was probably watching Disney Channel. But as I got older and contextualizing her character in that movie, it was for the time pretty forward thinking in regards to women and sex work and the amount of like respect and power that she commanded and demanded in that role, I thought felt pretty groundbreaking. And I remember watching that as a teenager, just being like, yes, like, go, Vivian. Like, I don't know, I was drawn to her as a character, and that always stuck with me. And then like every other movie that she's been in, her characters always tend to stick with me, so.
And you give such a nice nod to Vivian by making that Cole's last name also.
Yes. Well, it's interesting because as you're reading The Boyfriend Subscription, Cole's legal name is Vivian, and which is obviously like Vivian Ward from Pretty Woman. But when he changes his name to kind of separate himself from his family and his family name, he takes his first name and makes it his last name and then comes up with a brand new first name to go by. So I thought that kind of history was interesting to incorporate into the character of Cole.
How was it to play with all the Pretty Woman kind of tropes and ideas, but bring that into the 21st century? Because it's been, as you just noted, like 30 plus years since that movie hit. And so there's so much to evolve and bring up to date now.
It was really fun, and mostly because I had an excuse to watch the movie and rewatch it. And it's always interesting to like watch something with an eye for analysis and not just like, I'm going to sit down with some popcorn and just play something and enjoy it, but rather like, okay, I can enjoy this, but I'm also going to look at it with a very critical eye and then kind of dissect the story structure along with it. And as I'm doing that, thinking, okay, what can I use here? And then what's outdated? What doesn't really work in this context? Two of the most iconic scenes from Pretty Woman, right, is when she's when she's in the high-end boutique, right? And the salesperson kind of looks at her and turns her away, right? And she's like, big mistake, huge. And she kind of comes back and the salesperson eats her words. And then the other is when Richard Gere's character gives her the necklace and snaps the necklace case shut and she's laughing. And I was like, okay, well, these two scenes don't totally work in this context, because if Teddy is the Vivian Ward character and he doesn't have a lot of money and he's going to a high-end store, like, he's not going to go to the store dressed like a hooker and get turned away, right? So I have to figure out how exactly I'm going to play that scene. And so for me, it was like, okay, well, it's going to be, well, I don't want to spoil anything, but like, Teddy runs into his ex-husband in that department store and his ex-husband has a new fiance. And so you kind of get the drama of that scene a little bit played out, where Teddy feels like he's just kind of been tossed to the side. So picking from what's underneath all of that, like, why did Julia Roberts' character get tossed out, is because how she was dressed and like, how might she have felt in that moment, and pick that emotion up and kind of played with it using the characters that I created.
And these characters are interesting too, because on top of all the Pretty Woman stuff that you've given them, they both have a lot of things going on with family. Cole, as you mentioned, is kind of separated from his, and Teddy's been going through a lot with his divorce and things that have happened with his now ex's family. They both have interesting friends going on who are like trying to protect them, but not always exactly to their best interests. So you've piled on a lot of interesting things here too. What was your process to bring all of these elements together to create your characters?
Oof. That's a really good question. And it was really just like, how do I, kind of like how I approach any story, like, how do I make these characters rich, round, fulfilling characters for readers? And like, okay, I got to build out not only their backstory, but who they have in their lives. And like, one of my favorite characters in the book is Teddy's best friend, Kit. And if people are familiar with Pretty Woman, Vivian's best friend in Pretty Woman's name is Kit. So I'm like, I'm going to take that and I'm just going to plop that name right into the story. But in this story, she is a Black lesbian who is in a triad and she's afraid of commitment and moving in with her two girlfriends. And so like, I wanted to kind of play with that and like what kind of dynamic that would create in the narrative, and how can I bring this triad into the story in some ways? Like, obviously it's not the spotlight, but I wanted to make the side characters as rich as I possibly could. And one of my other favorite characters, Cole's sister, Mallory, in the initial drafting process, she came in very late in the story. Like, it was always like he needed, part of the reason why the fake dating trope comes in is Cole needs a date so that he can keep his family at bay, because he hasn't seen his family in like 10 years. And so he thinks with a date, it'll be a distraction and nobody will bother him and nobody will like uncover his secrets. And so it's a whole like convoluted thing. But in the first draft, or the first, I think, two drafts, Mallory was not really a main side character at all. In my revision process, I brought her into the very beginning. And I was like, and that was like some of the feedback that both my agent and my editor gave, was like, we need Cole to be a little bit more empathetic, because in my initial drafts, he was very cold and kind of hardened. And he was very much like anti-love, which is different than how Cole ends up in this. Like, he's still very much like I'm keeping myself emotionally distanced, I'm not getting involved, I don't kiss, I don't want a boyfriend, I don't want love. But in my initial version, like, he was very like vehemently anti-love, which I thought created an interesting like juxtaposition given the types of services he was providing on the app that he created that sort of like hinged on intimacy. But I needed to soften him up. And so Mallory was the way to do that.
It's interesting with Mallory because she softens him and then Teddy kind of comes in to finish the softening a little bit as it goes. I really felt that Mallory too kind of grounded Cole a little bit from all the chaos of the business and what he's trying to do with that and what's going on with the family and everything. And she was just that soothing kind of influence that he could talk to periodically to be like, this is okay and it will be okay.
Yeah. And I love that you use that word soothing, because that was kind of like it's exactly what I was going for. Like, I made her, and by proxy Cole, like obsessed with crystals and healing, and like they're always holding crystals, and it's just like this quirky little thing that, like, you know, wealthy white women love. And wealthy white gays also love a crystal or two. So I was like, and not that I'm a wealthy by any means, but I love a crystal. So like, I'm just gonna make this like part of their characterization and connect them together. Cause in a lot of ways, I think they're different characters, Mallory and Cole, but I think in a lot of ways, like, they do make sense as siblings, just their pathways diverge a little bit, but they ultimately both want to make their dad proud and they want to like be a good child, which I think is a very relatable thing.
How much research did you have to do to get the various aspects of Teddy and Cole's kind of world that they inhabit right? Because there's a lot of stuff going on there between them that just isn't like knowledge you could just maybe have in your head potentially.
Absolutely. I mean, I definitely did a lot of research on OnlyFans and like gay OnlyFans sex workers and performers. And I definitely did a lot of work researching plants, because Teddy is a plant daddy and he owned his own nursery, and he was also an author where he wrote about plants and his experience. And so I cannot keep a fake succulent alive. So I had to do a lot of research on just like how to take care of plants, like baseline, and then like building from there. So that was fun. And it's like, it's not necessarily something that I can or have been able to put into practice, because I just keep killing plants. So I'm hoping I got my details correct. But yeah, I can't say that I put any of that into actual practice.
And it's interesting how that comes into play too, especially for Teddy, because his plant knowledge actually sort of ingratiates him a little bit into Cole's family, because he can talk to Cole's parents and his sister and such about plants and maybe their gardens and things like that.
Yeah. And I think that's kind of like the interesting thing about just like human connection, is like, if you find one window in, all of a sudden, like, everything else kind of opens up. And so like for Teddy, I think because of the nature of his divorce in the book and like that whole backstory, aside from Kit, like, he really does feel very alone. And he's not from New York, but he's living in New York, so he has no family except for Kit, his best friend. And so when he meets Cole's family and there is that kind of in, and they immediately welcome him in, I think it echoes a lot of like real world kind of situations. Like, I don't know, I think when I met the man that I'm dating right now, my boyfriend's family, I think it's very strange to meet the family for the first time, which is something that I hadn't done in ages, because my ex-husband, I was with him for 12 years. And so it seemed like so long ago from the last time I met somebody's family. And just kind of like thinking about that process and then how it, in a way, echoed Teddy's just by like dint of like finding something, finding a window, and then being able to talk. And then all of a sudden everything kind of takes off from there. And you just have that like, oh, I know these people and I like these people and I love these people already. And it all happens very quickly, I think. And I think that also happens too, when like the connection is genuine. And like, obviously Cole and Teddy's story happens in a matter of days. And so, yeah, they do fall for each other rather quickly, considering, but that's why it's fiction. I do think that it happens so organically in the book, like Teddy taking to Cole's family because Teddy and Cole have a genuine connection, even if neither one of them are like thinking about it in those terms at that time, because of the whole fake dating of it all.
They were so not realizing how much feels that their fake dating had created until so near the end. It was just amazing to watch it. The light bulbs kind of go off for them, like, wait a minute.
Yeah, that was an interesting thing to think about too, because I do think that gay relationships do tend to materialize and progress differently than heterosexual or opposite sex relationships. From my experience alone, like you can meet somebody and develop feels. Doesn't mean feelings, but feels very quickly. And whether or not that continues obviously depends on whether both people are in the same place and all of that. But I do think that there is that recognition of feels rather quickly. And that's that kind of like creates a little bit more of a separation between Boyfriend Subscription and Pretty Woman, even though, again, Pretty Woman only takes place across a matter of days. I mean, they fall for each other very quickly. So maybe I don't know what I'm talking about.
Well, rom-coms in particular, and I mean, a lot of romances have a very tight time clock. A few days, a couple weeks, maybe a month, but it does happen, I mean, fairly quickly, just because otherwise you're going to write a really long book that goes on for a really long time.
Yes, exactly. Or if you're having a book that you're just getting these vignettes and it takes place over a matter of months or years, and you're just getting little tiny windows into pieces of the relationship, which I think definitely works in a much more literary context than your typical kind of romance setting type of context.
What's a favorite scene of yours from this book?
Oh, I really, there's so many. That sounds ridiculous because I'm the writer. I should be able to pick something, or I should be like, no, I love everything equally, but I do. I think the scenes, some of my favorite scenes are definitely the sex scenes. I quite enjoy.
It is very spicy and awesome. Yes.
I definitely ramped it up a little bit and then had to cut back a little bit because maybe I was a little too far. So I was like, I need to rein it in. But there's some of those scenes were some of the most fun to write because it was like, I can let go and they're so into each other. And once they acknowledge secretly that they are into each other and they can kind of let go sexually, I think the writing feels very fluid. Like every time I go back and reread it, I'm like, these are some really fluid sex scenes. And in some ways, like, sure, graphic, steamy, spicy, but also very beautifully written, if I do say so myself. But I also love the scene where they kiss for the first time. And I also love their first meeting, towards the kind of middle or beginning-ish of the book. I'm trying to remember what the hell I wrote. When they are at the steps of the Met and Teddy realizes that Cole is wearing a leather harness. And so that scene is one of my favorites. It's like one of the ones that stuck out to me because I had that visual in my head when I first started writing it. Like, that's where things are really going to take off and there's going to be a harness involved.
I could just envision that like written on the outline somewhere. This is where it takes off, and there's a harness in this scene somewhere.
Someone wears a harness, and maybe both of them end up wearing a harness. Who knows?
I love the Met thing because it was such, I think, a traditional idea of what New York glamour is. There's like the events that happen, but then there are some, like the Met, that it just feels very glamorous and important. And for Teddy to get to go to that with Cole, it was just like, oh, it was almost like a Pretty Woman moment, but not pulled from that movie. They had other glamorous things that they did there.
Exactly. Yeah, that was something that I was really trying to look at, like, okay, what are some iconic New York City locations? And then what are the ones that are really going to work for me in this book? And like, what feels maybe either too contemporary or what feels outdated? And like, just going back and forth and trying to figure out, like, okay, the book doesn't only take place in New York. We do, I mean, in New York City, it does go a little bit outside the city into Westchester, but I wanted it to feel very recognizable, but not necessarily something like cheesy and touristy, I guess, even though obviously there are millions of tourists who go to the Met. It just, it really, like you said, it just felt more like classic New York for me.
We were talking before I hit the record button on this interview about the book, and you told me that there was a lot left on the cutting room floor. Something like 20,000 words got removed out of this book, which, you know, that's not insignificant. What's something favorite from the cutting room floor?
So the original backstory for Teddy's character, his ex-husband, there was a lot of like really beautiful backstory about him and his relationship with his ex and how he met his ex and how his ex encouraged his love of plants and helped him to kind of open up his nursery. And in the original draft, the ex-husband dies. And
that's a much different spin on things.
Very different, very, very different. And actually, in the original manuscript, Teddy had two exes. He had one nice ex who was this kind of like supportive, whatever. And then he had kind of the dick ex. And the dick ex ended up staying in the book. And the nice dead ex ultimately got the chop. And I kind of took some of the characteristics and some of the backstory and blended it together as best I could. But there were a lot of flashback chapters specifically around Teddy. And there were a couple of flashback chapters of Cole that ended up getting mostly chopped. There were some, a little bit of like Cole and Teddy backstory that you get kind of interpolated into the present day narrative. But yeah, that was, I hated losing all that backstory, but I do think that it made much more sense story-wise for Teddy to have one main ex instead of two that readers had to keep track of, especially because one of them dies. So like, where's that going to go? Like story-wise, I don't know. It was just, it was one of those threads that could easily get cut, but not so easily because it ended up being many words and many pages that I had to get rid of.
Well, certainly if you were a Hallmark movie, I mean, there's dead exes in those things all the time, dead exes and dead families. So you certainly picked up a trope that is often used in rom-coms and romance movies.
I mean, yeah, sometimes it's like, all right, I got to pick my tropes. I got to see which tropes are actually worth exploring. And this was my, this was something that like, I wanted to write a tropey romance. Because I think while, I mean, I think so much of what writers write is it relies on tropes and things that are recognizable, and it provides a sense of comfort to readers because it relies on a lot of these Hallmark storytelling techniques. And but I don't think that I'd necessarily, like, in any of the previous books that I wrote, I don't think I set out going like, I'm going to use this trope. But with this, I was like, I'm going to use this trope. We're going to, like, dive into fake dating and we're going to, like, get into all of that. And I think it was something where I had to figure out, like, okay, what's going to work here? What isn't going to work here? Some things obviously didn't end up panning out and some things did.
And we talked about briefly the Hallmark storytelling, but it's also very much Harlequin storytelling. The boyfriend subscription is part of Harlequin's new Afterglow line, and they're certainly looking for tropey stories.
Yeah. Yeah. Which worked out in my favor because, you know, I didn't know when this manuscript sold to Harlequin. It sold under the intent of they're starting this new line in January of 2024. But back then, like, nobody knew about it when it sold, like when boyfriend subscription sold. Nobody knew that there was going to be a new line. It wasn't public yet. Didn't even have a name. And like, I didn't write the book with that in mind. I wrote it like, we're going to write it and we're going to try to sell it. And my agent loved it. So she's like, all right, let's go. We're going to try to sell this. And so it just so happened that this new line was materializing and it ended up being a perfect, beautiful match. And couldn't be happier because my editor is absolutely fabulous.
And this is your first adult romance after three YA books. What kind of made it time to go in the direction of the adult romance?
I think that, okay, well, I'll give you more of an honest answer. My first three YAs, Can't Take That Away, and They Lived in No Perfect Places, I really wrote those as a way to heal my younger self. And there's so much of me in the main characters of those books. Things that I went through personally, experiences that I had, and just, okay, I need to pat little Steven on the back and be like, you're okay. You're going to be okay. Like, let's write 1,000 pages worth of therapy between these three books and you'll be fine at the end of it. And so by the time No Perfect Places had sold, I'll say, I was kind of getting to this place of, I don't know that I have more young adult stories in me because like what, ultimately, what I set out to do was I'd always wanted to be a writer, always wanted to be a storyteller, always wanted to publish books. But with writing YA, it was like, I'm writing these books for me and I'm trying to heal my inner trauma. And so I did that. And then it was like, all right, well, now I have a whole shit ton of adult trauma to go through. Let's get into that. I started writing the boyfriend subscription really as my marriage was winding down and there was a lot of strife with that, a lot of inner conflict. And so I took on the role of Teddy in that and was exploring who I was through Teddy, but not even all that much. I kind of used the boyfriend subscription as an escape and be like, all right, we're going to like, take this movie that I've always loved. We're going to like make it really tropey. We're going to try to make it as fun as possible, but still have some depth in there and still explore some concepts that like are top of mind for me right now because of whatever's going on with me personally, but make it gay, make it fun, make it spicy. And so I think a lot of what I'll end up writing adult wise after my Harlequin books might end up being more a little darker, a little more exploring some of the perils of being an adult gay.
Do you see some of those like darker romance or just darker like genres and subgenres?
I have one more contracted book for Harlequin that's coming out in summer of 2025, I think. And that's going to be a romance straight up, just like boyfriend subscription. But I'm also working on what I'm calling my divorce book and just kind of exploring the end of a marriage, I guess, like a reverse romance. Like what happens when people are fighting when maybe one person's fighting to save a marriage and another person isn't, and kind of letting it fall apart. And how do you rectify that? So I wouldn't say necessarily like straight up romance, but there's always going to be something in everything that I write that does have that nod to romance, if it's whether if it's straight up romance or something a little bit more genfic.
Can you tease us anything about the 2025 Harlequin and what it may be?
I don't know if I can give the title, even though it does have a title, and it's very reminiscent of the boyfriend subscription. So it's three words. It's kind of, it's falling in line. So like when you see it, you'll be like, oh, okay. That kind of makes sense. It kind of goes together.
But I feel like we should play charades now.
I know, right? All right. Three
that words. Way.
First word is the, and I think what I can say is it is about a side character in the boyfriend subscription who becomes main character in this next book. So for anybody out there who has read or wants to read the boyfriend subscription or is reading, you'll meet Cole's ex, Nico, right towards the beginning of the boyfriend subscription. And so we're going to get his story in the next book. And it's going to be... going to be like a reality show dating / marriage competition type of a thing. So that is, I don't even know if I could say that, but that's what I'm saying.
I'll tell Harlequin when I forced it out of you.
Maybe my editor will be listening and they'll email me being like, oh my God.
I love that it's connected, because like any good romance, that means we're going to get a little bit of how Teddy and Cole are doing in there too. Because I really envision them as turning into this really cool power couple.
I kind of do too. And you'll know the way I have it, the way it's planned out is you'll know pretty soon into the next book what ends up happening with Cole and Teddy.
Nice. So in addition to all the writing that you do, you also run Queerative Writers, and here's where you're working with queer writers. You offer courses and editorial services. Tell us a little more about that and how you started that up.
Yeah, so it's something that I've wanted to do for a while, and I teach college writing. I've taught college writing since 2012, and it's something that I went to school for. It's been my career. I know how to teach writing. I ran a writing department. But I also am feeling like maybe perhaps my career in higher education is winding down, mostly because there's just a lot of bureaucratic shit. And I'm finding that I'm teaching creative writing less and less. And I don't know if it's just not getting offered as much, but my heart lies with creative writing. So I decided to create my own business, Queerative Writers, where I run online virtual creative writing workshops. It's aimed toward queer writers, aspiring writers, but anybody can take a course. There was nothing out there that was specifically geared toward queer LGBTQ plus aspiring writers. And I do think that from my experience in writing courses as a student in grad school, there's a real difference in how writing is perceived by straight het teachers and other, you know, straight cishet students in the class when you're being workshopped and your work is being read by everybody, because the queer experience is a hell of a lot different. Yeah, sure, there's a lot of crossover. There's a lot of similarities. Like the world for me is the world for you and you, but we experience an additional layer of shit. And we see things through a different lens. And a lot of that does come out in the writing. Like it's no secret that I don't write my books for straight cishet people. I write them with gay readers in mind. I hope that everybody reads my stuff, but I'm writing it for queer readers. And so I wanted to create a safe space for writers to explore themselves, explore their work in a space where they're not going to be judged through a cishet lens.
Hopefully some of the writers and aspiring writers that we have in our audience will go check out the offerings that you have going on there.
Yeah, that'd be wonderful. I took a little bit of a break, but I'm looking to get some courses up and running in the next couple of months, because I'm on deadline for lots of stuff right now, and I'm teaching a full-time course load. So I'm like, oh my God, I have no time to also teach virtually. And so I'm trying to do a little bit of a balance. So I'm hoping that I can eventually like step away from higher ed and focus more on queer writers.
That'd be awesome. Yeah. It definitely fills a niche that I don't think anybody else is in, or if they are, they're keeping it hidden to themselves at the moment. Of course, we love to get recommendations on the show. What are you reading or watching that our listeners should check out, if you've actually got time to do any of that between everything else you just mentioned?
I mean, my reading has gone downhill because of I haven't had much time. But I will say there are a couple of books that are coming out this year that I'm obsessed with. So in the YA space, Matthew Hubbard, he's a debut author, and his book, The Last Boyfriend's Rules for Revenge, it feels very like Mean Girls, but gay and without the bitchy main characters. The main characters are so lovable. That book comes out, I'm pretty sure it's end of April. But that book is so, so, so good, and I can't wait for people to get their hands on it. And in the adult space, Nicholas DiDomizio, his third book is coming out from Source Books, Casablanca, Nearly Wed, which is about a gay engaged couple who takes an early moon before the wedding. And the main character is like a chaotic millennial who writes for like a BuzzFeed type of publication. And his fiance is a Gen X doctor. So there's a little bit of an age difference there, and the way they live their lives, like the main character is very, very visible online and his fiance is not at all. And so it's a lot of like relationship testing stuff happens while they're on their early moon. And it's like, are they right for each other? Will they make it to their wedding? And it was a beautiful book. And there's so much exploration of like, I think what a lot of like gay relationships are or have experienced, and a lot of like the tests of that. So I can't recommend that book enough. I just read it. I mean, Nick is one of my closest friends. I've known him for closing in on 11 years now, but I hadn't gotten a chance to read Nearly Wed until over New Year's when I was away visiting family. And I finally got to sit down with it, and I was just blown away by it. It's so freaking good.
It's always amazing to see your friends just do amazing work.
Yes. Yes. It's incredible. It really is a wonderful thing.
And we talked a little bit about your new Harlequin coming in 2025. What else is coming up for you? You said you were working on two books. What else have you got?
Yeah. So also coming out in 2025, I don't know exactly when just yet. I want to say like also summer of 2025. So I might have two books out summer 2025, like within very close proximity, which gives me a lot of anxiety because that means I'm going to be very tired. But my next YA, Lemon at First Sight, is coming out, and that is it's very loosely inspired by My Best Friend's Wedding, continuing the theme of my love of Julia Roberts, where the main character, Fielder Lemon, is going to his older cousin's destination wedding in Amalfi, Italy. And he finds out that his cousin is marrying his ex-boyfriend's older sister. So his ex-boyfriend, who was he considered the love of his life, is going to be there. And so he kind of plots to, or schemes to try to win back his ex. But then his ex shows up with a new boyfriend. So we're trying to win back love in a beautiful Italian setting in a lemon grove in the Amalfi Coast. I'm currently drafting it right now and I am obsessed with it. It's fun and I think it's going to piss people off and it's going to, other people are going to love it, but I love it. So that's all I can ask.
I'm looking forward to seeing how you translate My Best Friend's Wedding into a YA setting.
Yes, there is no obviously marriage pact of like, if we're both 28, we'll get married. Obviously, that's one of those things that had to fall by the wayside. So that's where the loosely inspired by My Best Friend's Wedding comes into play.
What else are you eyeing in the Julia Roberts library to translate and to adapt later? Anything else on your radar?
I mean, I did have a little bit of a brief romance with Runaway Bride. So that could be interesting. Obviously, that would be very much adult. There's no way you could do that in the YA space. But there, I mean, there's so much. Honestly, okay, one of my favorite Julia Roberts movies, which I feel like doesn't get as much attention, is Stepmom. Do you remember Stepmom?
Yeah.
With Susan Sarandon. That movie makes me ugly cry. And I, obviously that would not be in the romance space at all, but taking on themes like that, parental relationships, and I don't know, it hit me at a very young age, that movie, and maybe because I had a stepmom. So it may be something there, but I don't know anything. There's so much. I could write with Julia Roberts in mind. If she wants to hire me to write a script for her, an original, I'm all on board. So in case she's listening, hi, I'm here.
And if she's listening, I'd like to know that because that'd be pretty cool too.
I'll write something on spec. Just like hit me up. Someone get Julia Roberts' agent on the phone.
There you go. Somewhere out there in our listenership. Let's hook these two together.
Yes. She could have a gay son. It could be like she could play like the scheming mom trying to break up her gay son's toxic wedding relationship. I don't know. I'm just spitballing here in case she's listening. But
all ideas here are Stephen's property. What is the best way for people to keep up with you online so they know when all this stuff is coming out?
I would say definitely Instagram at Stephen Salvatore Books. I am technically, I guess, on Twitter/X, but I have not been on it since late or probably middle of last year. Probably around the time that it switched to X, I was like, I'm out of here. I am on TikTok. I think my handle is Stephen Salvatore Books. I should probably know that. But it's linked on my Instagram. So Instagram, I'm very active on. TikTok, I just scroll late at night. I'm not one of those like authors who is posting themselves on TikTok because I don't know how to do that. And I feel like I would look very bad if I did try. So, but you could still follow me there. That'd be nice. You could get onto my newsletter, which I only promise to blast out when I have a book coming out so people can buy my books.
Cool. We will link up to all of that in the show notes, along with all the books and other stuff that we talked about. Stephen, thank you so much for being here and talking to us about the boyfriend subscription. I can't wait for people to get that in their hands and start reading it.
Thank you so much for having me, Jeff. I appreciate it. Love the pod. This was an amazing conversation. I'm so happy and I'm so glad you like the boyfriend subscription.
This episode's transcript has been brought to you by our community on Patreon. If you'd like to read the conversation for yourself, head on over to the show notes page for this episode at biggayfictionpodcast.com. We've got links to everything that we've talked about in this episode.
Thanks so much to Stephen for coming to talk to us about the boyfriend subscription. I already loved his YA books, and now I am a big fan of his adult romances too. I'm super excited for everything he's got coming up. And if you're in the mood for some fake dating Pretty Woman style, I hope you'll pick up the Boyfriend subscription and give it a try.
Okay, I think that'll do it for now. Coming up next on Monday, April 8th, we're going to find out about a new romantic suspense series called Accidentally Undercover.
That's right. Accidentally Undercover is a multi-author series that focuses on ordinary people who get caught up with spies, assassin, and other undercover types. We're going to be joined by the series creators, Layla Rain and Allison Temple, along with Kari Z, who has a book in the series, and they're going to tell us everything about it.
Jeff and I, we want to thank you so much for listening, and we hope that you'll join us again soon for more discussions about the kinds of stories we all love, the big gay fiction kind. Until then, keep turning those pages and keep reading. Big Gay Fiction Podcast is part of the Frolic Podcast Network. Find more shows you'll love at frolic.media/podcasts. Original theme music by Daryl Banner.